At the legislature today, they may be called minor committees in the House of Delegates, but the legislation they consider is anything but minor. Committees today consider bills about timber theft and affordable insurance copayments. And the special report tonight from Hampshire County. We'll learn more about the West Virginia schools for the deaf and blind in Romney on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Beth Voorhees. As we near the end of this legislative session, senators are splitting their floor sessions meeting twice a day to advance more bills. In their morning session, the chamber passed eight bills, including one to ease prison overcrowding by giving inmates more access to classes necessary to make parole. Ashton Morrow reports.
Senators took up Senate Bill 457, requiring the State Division of Corrections to offer the rehabilitative courses to inmates in their custody who are being held at regional jails. The bill comes from Senator Don Cookman, a former circuit court judge. Cookman says by providing DOC inmates with courses that make them parole ready, the state can reduce prison overcrowding. The estimated $750,000 investment in additional courses could save the state up to $8 million. According to the regional jail authority. Senators agreed and passed the bill unanimously. But it was a second bill Cookman has introduced that he stood to address. Senate Bill 567 was introduced last week and calls for the Division of Corrections to become its own state department with a cabinet-level secretary. That new department would incorporate the Regional Jail Authority, Division of Justice and Community Service, and the Board of Probation and Parole.
I stand here probably the biggest supporter or one of the biggest supporters in this room of making certain that the per diem for our regional jails that are paid for by our county commissions throughout the state are kept low. And I agree with most everybody in this room. I think that that is very important. When we go around our districts and we talk to our county commissioners and ask them what their number one problem is, they almost unanimously say the regional jail bills. And so I am very cognizant of that fact. But Senate Bill 57, or excuse me, 567, will not do that. It is not going to increase the per diem. I think it's just a scare tactic to get some people to be opposed to the bill. So basically I'm asking that as this bill goes through the legislative process, that everybody keep an open mind and listen to the pros and cons of Senate Bill 567.
The senator added West Virginia would join 36 other states who have a cabinet-level corrections secretary. Senators also took up Senate Bill 376 today, requiring construction workers employed on publicly contracted sites to complete a 10-hour Office of Health and Safety Administration training course. Judiciary Chair Senator Corey Palumbo explained the course is offered by Brick Street Insurance for free in some cities, but is also available through multiple organizations online for a fee range ranging from $10 to $30. He added the class is only required to be completed once, not each time a construction worker begins on a new site or on an annual basis. The bill passed on a 33-1 vote. Senator Bob Plymel stood at the end of the session to bring attention to an issue often talked about in the legislature, but one he says lawmakers have failed in recent years to take action on. Plymel says as he drives back and forth from Wayne County, he's noticed the condition of state roads is worse than ever. Because of a lack of funds, the state is on an average 33-year paving cycle that the Division of Highways would like to see at 12 and a half.
To me, I don't know how much it's going to cost. I would say it's going to be between $20 and $25 million to be able to do the right and appropriate paving cycle. But we have got to find something, even if it is in the rainy day fund, because this is a rainy day for our roads. And if our roads are not kept and maintained, we are going to run into problems as we move forward. So I would urge, Mr. President, that we try to do everything we can to, before we leave here, to have some kind of a service to be able to do the paving cycle that for this spring.
The governor's Blue Ribbon Commission on Highways, a group appointed by Tomlin to find new revenue sources for infrastructure development, has pushed off their final report until after the session, meaning any recommendations from the executive on roads are still on hold. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in the Senate.
The House of Delegates today voted on a bill to establish standards for court reporters and firms that provide court reporting services. Those in opposition of House Bill 4294 claimed it was unnecessary regulation and would hurt West Virginians working in the field. Those in favor of the bill said it protects state-based court reporters. The bill passed 87-9 and moves on to the Senate for consideration. Before the floor session, as Aaron Payne reports, several minor committees met to look over legislation, including the Banking and Insurance Committee and the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee.
The first bill the House Agriculture and Natural Resource Committee looked at was Senate Bill 353. The bill would define timber theft in the state and give the Division of Forestry authority to investigate and enforce penalties of theft in state forests. Under current code, the division must hand over investigations to other law enforcement agencies. Delegate Woody Ireland asked the West Virginia Division of Forestry Director Randy Dye how many thefts have occurred in the 60,000 applicable acres of forest in the past 5 years. Dye said that the statistic could not be tracked due to current classifications. However, he did relay theft in one particular forest.
Unfortunately, timber does not have a distinct separate code, and so we can't answer that. But on Cabway Lingo, as an example, one state forest, we have five documented cases where approximately $100,000 worth of timber was stolen. And we, the Division of Forestry, did not have the authority to investigate that.
The bill was passed and referred to the Judiciary Committee. Another bill the committee discussed was House Bill 4523 that would allow the Commissioner of the Department of Agriculture to make rules regulating fertilizer containing phosphate and establish the penalties for violating those rules. The hope is that the rules would align with other states such as Maryland in order to prevent runoff pollution into water sources. Some delegates were concerned that without phosphate, lawn care would become difficult. However, Vice Chair Mike Manypenny explained that without phosphate, lawns could still receive the nutrients they need.
Your lawn's going to stay green because of the nitrogen, and there is going to be residual phosphate in the soils. It just isn't going to need to be applied to where it, usually this is a liquid fertilizer that they use for lawn care maintenance, and it's very susceptible to runoff since it's already a soluble fertilizer.
Delegate Manypenny also explained that phosphate is used to seed and flower. The bill was approved and sent to the Judiciary Committee. The House Banking and Insurance Committee also met to discuss, among other bills, House Bill 4474, relating to prohibition on higher co-payments or co-insurance. Committee Chair Nancy Guthrie says the bill's purpose is to prevent insurance policies from charging higher co-payments for specialists than for primary care physicians or general practitioners.
If you're going to your GP, your co-pay might be $15. But if you're going to heart specialist, it might be $25. There are a whole bunch of specialties that wanted to have sort of a standardized, uniform co-pay system. With the ACA coming into existence, the entire framework for healthcare is changing. And so it's one of those things where we're probably asking in this bill to allow the insurance companies to recalculate how they do co-pays.
The committee spoke with several experts about the fiscal impact insurers might face due to the bill. Delegate Mark Hunt asked PEIA Director Ted Cheatham about uniting most, if not all, specialists under one payment.
If you spread the risk out over all these professions, maybe instead of having the $10 copay, maybe we go to a $15 for everyone, and you wouldn't have the $25 copays on the far end for the specialist. Would that be correct? Or
potentially. I think you'd be surprised at the amount of care that can be done by primary care, and that $25 copay is an incentive to keep people at primary care and refer to the specialist system, because that's the most efficient way to do care.
The committee approved the bill to move on to the House Judiciary Committee. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne in the House.
In a moment, a visit with the State Commissioner of Agriculture. First, here's a look at what's coming up in the Senate tomorrow. Among the bills on second reading in the Senate tomorrow, Senate Bill 252, providing that a pupil who successfully completes or is certified as making satisfactory progress towards successful completion of juvenile drug court shall return to school by lessening the period of expulsion. Senate Bill 461, creating the Future Fund as a means of conserving a portion of the state's revenue derived from the increased proceeds received by the state as a result of any oil and natural gas production. Senate Bill 468, to provide for the awarding of a West Virginia Veterans Medal and Ribbon and a West Virginia Service Cross and Ribbon to qualifying West Virginia veterans. Senate Bill 477, providing that teachers determine their use of time during planning periods. Administrators may not compel a teacher to attend meetings, training, or any other work-related event during a planning period, except for occasional instances. Senate Bill 487, that commencing July 1st, 2014, a municipality has the authority to enact a municipal sales tax at a rate of 1% or less. Senate Bill 507, relating to the Board of Barbers and Cosmetologists, and require the board to offer examinations in other languages if available and upon request. Senate Bill 603, to improve coal mine health and safety in West Virginia. The bill requires automatic shutoff of an apparatus where a machine-mounted methane monitor indicates a methane concentration. And Senate Bill 621, to authorize insurers to offer flood insurance in this state. Our guest tonight was elected to his first four-year term as West Virginia's Commissioner of Agriculture in November 2012 and took office just over a year ago on January 14, 2013. Prior to this position, Walt Helmick was a veteran legislator, elected to the House of Delegates in 1988, appointed to the state Senate in 1989, and served six four-year terms there. Mr. Commissioner, welcome. Glad you're here.
Thanks, Beth, for having me. Well, appreciate the opportunity.
Been in the job for a year now. Give us an update on agriculture in West Virginia. Where have we been, and where do you want to take it?
Well, where we've been, it's a different story over the years, as you might imagine. We see that agriculture at one point in West Virginia in the early 30s was substantial. Everybody had some animals, farm animals, and they grew about everything that they consumed.
That's right.
But over the years, it changed, and now USDA tells us, and with our research we've done to back it up with our tax system, that we're consuming about $7.1 billion in food product a year. We grow less than one, so the product that we consume in West Virginia is imported. We see a significant opportunity. We don't see that as a problem. We see it as an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Opportunity for significant growth in row crops, expansion of our meat products in West Virginia, the beef industry, the sheep industry, to look at, you know, where we've been again with those different entities and the different product we want to grow and leverage that as we move forward. So we're working to develop a labor force that's consistent with the direction we want to take agriculture. We think there's a significant opportunity and that that we'll do well in the future.
There is significant opportunity for small farms. The small farm-to-table movement. You've been supportive of small farming. What plans do you have for the larger industries?
Well, we'll go to the mechanical industry. We'll have to in order to compete with other states that now are providing the product that we consume in West Virginia. The small farm, as you mentioned, we're very much supportive of farm-to-table, farm-to-school.
Yes.
Those things we're very much involved with. But we want to go to the next level, and that is to provide a situation in West Virginia, an opportunity for people to work and make a good living in agriculture. We know that opportunity is there. It's that $6 billion that I was referring to earlier. Mm-hmm. And so we can grow those products in West Virginia, process them here, and we will use the people in West Virginia as our first customers. Mm-hmm. And the first customers within that base will be those entities that are supported with taxpayer dollars. So we're working toward putting together a program that will allow West Virginia growers, West Virginia farmers to grow the product, and we think we've got a pretty good distribution system in place.
Beef, sheep,
yes.
Pork?
All of those. And we visited other states to see how they're doing some of the secondary manufacturing, especially in pork. We were down in North Carolina about a month ago, spent some time down there. They have a $2.5 billion industry in North Carolina. We know that we'll not reach that amount, but we know that we can do it environmentally sound, a certain place in West Virginia, especially in southern West Virginia, where we have 105,000 acres of mountaintop removal land available to us. We have the rail service. Mm-hmm. We have the water. We have the electricity. We have those things that are necessary, and we know that we can put together a workforce that we can do a lot of those things in West Virginia for West Virginia.
And I wish we had more time, because I'd like to explore that a little bit more, but I'm afraid we're out of time. Commissioner Walt Helmick, thank you so much. In a moment, a special report from the Schools for the Deaf and Blind in Hampshire County. First, here's a look at what's coming up in the House tomorrow. Thank you, sir. Among the bills up for passage in the House, House Bill 4257, providing criminal penalties for using automated telephone calls to disseminate false information during a state of emergency. The penalty is a misdemeanor, carrying up to a year in jail and up to a $5,000 fine. House Bill 4425, allowing the superintendent of the state police to employ legal counsel and legal support staff. And House Bill 4455, allowing licensed wineries and distillers to sell products beginning at 10:30 Sunday mornings. Among the bills on second reading, House Joint Resolution 108 to propose an amendment to the West Virginia Constitution to be considered at the 2014 general election to exempt property owned by the Boy Scouts of America, which is leased or used to generate revenue for the organization. House Bill 3108, requiring nursing homes to conduct a criminal background check on all applicants before permanent employment. House Bill 4318, requiring medical professionals to complete 2 hours of continuing education a year on mental health conditions common to veterans and their families. House Bill 4409, to create the Valued Employee Retention Program as a short-term compensation program in which an employer who participates reduces the number of hours worked by their employees in lieu of layoffs. The program is completely voluntary, and an employer is under no obligation to participate. House Bill 4437, to allow the Division of Juvenile Services to maintain trustee bank accounts, earnings, and property for its residents in the same manner as accounts are handled by the Division of Corrections, and to create a resident benefit fund for the welfare of the residents in any state juvenile facility and for the benefit of victims. And House Bill 4490, the Attorney General Ethics and Accountability Act. Among its provisions, the bill states that the Attorney General may not file friend of court briefs without the direction of the governor or Speaker of the House and Senate President. Officials at the West Virginia Schools for the Deaf and Blind have spent about 2 years reworking a master plan that would allow the schools to better serve students on the Romney campus and across the state. During this legislative session, Superintendent Dr. Lynn Boyer is hoping for monetary support for this effort. Last week, that support came in the way of a resolution. House Concurrent Resolution number 92 was introduced. It requests that the West Virginia School Building Authority waive local matching requirements and fund all needed improvements at the schools. It was sponsored by every member of the House of Delegates. Cecilia Mason takes us on a tour of the campus in Hampshire County.
This is the sound of the 10th grade geometry class at the West Virginia School for the Deaf in Romney. Marty Blakely is using both American Sign Language and written English, a technique called code switching, to teach these students. These are some of the 120 or so students who attend the Schools for Deaf and Blind full-time. Many live on campus and travel home on weekends, often to counties at the other side of the state. About 3 years ago, the State Board of Education hired Dr. Lynn Boyer as superintendent and tasked her with finding a way to improve the education offered as well as the campus.
Despite how lovely our campus looks from the distance, inside there are many unmet facility needs. We are deeply underfunded to maintain a property of this size. We have 79 acres. We have 8 to 10 active buildings at all times. We have some buildings we have to marginally maintain, even though we can't use them.
The schools don't receive enough state money to maintain or modernize the campus. And unlike county boards of education, the schools for deaf and blind are hampered in their ability to raise the amount needed.
We have no authority as a entity, as an agency, to do a levy or a bond. And so we don't have an easy way to get money.
The Schools for Deaf and Blind put a 10-year plan together to make improvements in phases. The first phase is a 4-year project to upgrade the residential program. Boyer says the dormitory building that houses many of the students who live on campus was not designed with the needs of the deaf children who now occupy it.
The sight lines for communication are essentially non-existent. It is very much an old line dormitory. You walk in, you go to the right, you go to the left. You've got long hallways with doors that close. Lounge areas are somewhat separate. And so we don't see the kinds of best practice designs that we see now in dormitories and residence halls for children who are deaf, where their ability, their ease of communicating with each other through sign is made possible.
It will cost an estimated $20 million to bring the residential buildings up to modern standards. Boyer says some of the most pressing problems include the worn-out roof on the dormitory, insufficient air conditioning, an insufficient campus generator, antiquated security locks on all the buildings, and a need for upgraded technology. It's expected to take 4 years to complete this first phase of improvements. Boyer says the schools are asking for $8.5 million from the legislature that can be budgeted over several years, $11.4 million from the School Building Authority. The schools also plan to contribute $1.1 million raised through grants, private sources, and money savings. The schools are also tasked with serving deaf, hard of hearing, blind, and low vision students across West Virginia whose families prefer they get an education in their home counties. A new program started at the beginning of this school year offering students the opportunity to spend time on the Romney campus. They come by bus once a month for a week so they can study and take advantage of the specialized instruction that's available in classrooms like this one taught by Patty Myers.
I'll let you study. Your vocabulary's here, okay? We're going to go over them together first, and then we'll do a quiz.
The trip to Romney is part of the students' individual education plan, which is put together by the counties to address the needs of students with special challenges. The students come to Romney on Sunday and bring their regular classroom work so they don't fall behind in their studies.
And what about magazine?
Part of a gun that holds ammunition.
What is ammunition?
Ammunition, like ammo.
And while they're with me, we are addressing all that curriculum. But we're also looking at various strategies, various approaches, some aids that they can use when they go back to their county to continue using in their typical classrooms. It gives them better access to their print materials. And then our students who are deaf or hard of hearing, we make sure they get additional ASL, American Sign Language, and we give them a lot of study techniques as well to use. Okay, but what else can a magazine be?
Something you read.
Something you read, right.
Whether they're studying on the campus in Romney, coming here 1 week a month, or taking advantage of programs offered remotely, Lynn Boyer says she's convinced the Schools for Deaf and Blind still offer a type of education that is as relevant today as it was in 1870 when the schools were founded.
When I see a young child who is both deaf and blind work with a woman who can sign in his hand, can sign on his arm, can bring to him the kinds of services he needs so that his life will have meaning for him and his family. I know he can't get that anywhere else. Is it costly? Absolutely. There's no question about that. But when you see that happening,
And you know that for these children and all those who will come with them in time, their lives will be better and our communities will be better because of that. So do I think it's relevant? Absolutely.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Cecilia Mason in Romney.
This has been the Legislature Today. We leave you tonight with a performance by students from the Schools for the Deaf and Blind in the Senate Chamber today. I'm Beth Voorhees. Thanks for joining us. Good night.